All right, so we've got this Supreme Court case, Personnel Administrator of Massachusetts v. Feeney, and you know, you've asked us to unpack it, and it really all boils down to one question, right? Does giving veterans an advantage when applying for state jobs, does that discriminate against women?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating case. You know, it really forces us to kind of confront this tension, this idea that a law can be designed with, you know, good intentions, but still have these unintended negative consequences.
Totally. Yeah. And we're diving into a big one here, a Supreme Court case from 1979. And this case tackled Massachusetts law, the one that grants veterans absolute preference for state civil service jobs. Mm-hmm. So on the surface, it seems like a good thing, right? Way to honor those who serve. But then what happens to the women, especially back then, who statistically were far less likely to be veterans?
Yeah, that's exactly the dilemma this case brings up.
And to make things even more interesting, we've got a majority opinion, a dissenting opinion, AD a concurring opinion. So yeah, things are going to get interesting. Let's dive in.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Let's start with our main player here, Helen B. Feeney. She was a longtime resident of Dracut, Massachusetts, and she had worked in both the private and public sector, you know, and she really wanted to land a stable state job. So she took several civil service exams.
And that's, you know, where things get really interesting. So she kept scoring high on these exams, but she kept getting bumped down the list because of that veterans preference law in Massachusetts. Can you imagine putting in all that effort, proving your competence, and then just hitting this wall every time?
No, I mean, it must have been so frustrating. It's almost like you're running a race and someone else just gets a head start for no reason except that, well, they're a veteran. And we're talking about real consequences here. Like in one instance, Helen scored second highest on the dental examiner exam.
Yeah, second highest.
And third highest for an administrative assistant position. And both times she got passed over because veterans with lower scores were placed ahead of her. I mean, come on.
It's tough. And this wasn't just Helen's story either. The district court found that this law impacted thousands of women in Massachusetts who were trying to get those state jobs.
Okay, so let's break this down. You know, this veterans preference law. What did it actually say? How did it work in practice?
So it was pretty straightforward, almost stark in its simplicity. The law said that in Massachusetts, any veteran who passed a civil service exam would be put on the eligibility list ahead of any non-veteran. And it didn't matter how well those non-veterans scored, like at all.
Wow. So it's not about who's most qualified. It's just about who served, period. I can see how that would create a very uneven playing field. So what were the main arguments in favor of the law? Why did Massachusetts implement this kind of system in the first place?
Well, the reasoning is usually centered around a few key ideas, like thanking veterans for their sacrifices, helping them transition back into civilian life, also, you know, incentivizing enlistment in the military, and attracting people with, you know, a track record of discipline and service to government roles. So it's kind of a thank you and a helping hand all in one.
I see. It's a lot more than just saying thanks for serving. It's really trying to take care of veterans afterwards, set them up for success.
Yeah. And in this case, it wasn't even a new idea. They had some form of veterans preference in place since the 1800s. It started to help Civil War veterans.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. That historical context is, it's definitely important to note, but it also kind of raises this question, this issue. The military back then was, and even now it is, predominantly male. So how did that factor into the arguments against the law?
It played a huge role, a really huge role. I mean, think about the statistics. Over 98% of veterans in Massachusetts at the time were men. So this means that in practice, the veterans' preference was mostly benefiting men, which created this huge gap in opportunities for women.
98% is a very high number. That makes sense. So how did the Supreme Court address this? With a gender imbalance, I mean, did they see it as discriminatory?
Well, this is where the legal stuff gets really fascinating. The majority opinion actually surprised a lot of people, and they upheld the law.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Their logic was all about facial neutrality. What that means is basically that the law itself seemed neutral on the surface because it applied to all veterans no matter their gender, right?
Right.
So they basically said that even though the effects were uneven, the law wasn't explicitly targeting or excluding women. And they emphasize, you know, that the intent was to help veterans, not to hurt women. They saw it as a legitimate goal.
Okay, I get that. But it feels like that reasoning kind of ignores the very real disadvantages that women were facing. It's not just the words on paper, it's the impact. What did the dissenting justices say? Did they push back against this focus on intent?
Oh, absolutely they did. Their argument is a key part of this whole case. So the dissent basically said that the impact on women was so severe and so obvious that, intent or not, it showed discriminatory intent. Like, the outcome was so clearly against women that it didn't really matter what the lawmakers said they meant.
So they were seeing it as actions speak louder than words.
Yeah.
Right. Like, the outcome is so clearly disadvantaging women, especially given the history, that it's hard to believe there wasn't some intent there. Did they point to any specific examples to support their argument?
They did, yeah. They talked about the history of excluding women from military service, which obviously limited their access to veteran status. And they also brought up this thing called women's requisitions. Basically, it was an exemption in the law that reserved some state jobs only for women, often jobs that, you know, reinforce those traditional gender stereotypes.
Oh, wow.
So the dissent basically said that this showed a pattern of using neutral language to hide gender disparities. To them, the idea that this veteran's preference was totally unintentional, it just didn't hold up.
That's really interesting. So it all comes down to intent versus impact. On one hand, you've got the goal of supporting veterans, which most people would say is a good thing. But then you have the reality that the law really hurt women's chances of getting those jobs, especially since they weren't allowed in the military for so long. How do you even reconcile those two things?
That's the heart of the problem, isn't it? And it's a question that we are still struggling with. How do we make laws that achieve the goals they're supposed to achieve, but also avoid these negative consequences that keep inequality going?
It seems like even when we're trying to do the right thing, we need to be aware of how our actions can impact other people, mm-hmm. especially people who are already facing disadvantages.
Yeah. Personnel Administrator of Massachusetts v. Feeney, it makes us think about that, you know. It shows how even well-intentioned laws can make existing inequalities worse, and it forces us to be more careful, more thoughtful about how we design laws and policies, how we pursue justice.
It's definitely a case that makes you stop and think. And we haven't even gotten to the concurring opinion yet. What did that add to the discussion?
That's right. We've got another layer to uncover here. Justice Stevens, the one who wrote the concurring opinion, he brought up something that a lot of people miss, which is the number of men who were actually also hurt by the veterans' preference law.
Oh, because they weren't veterans themselves.
Exactly. He's basically saying, hold on, if this is all about giving an advantage to men in general, shouldn't help all men, not just the veterans.
It's a really good point. I mean, it really complicates that simple narrative of men versus women that usually comes up in cases like this.
Yeah, it does. It shows that things aren't always so black and white. And it highlights how important it is to look beyond those simple categories.
It's fascinating, right? This case, Personnel Administrator of Massachusetts v. Feeney, it's not just a legal battle. It's a clash of different ways of thinking, different experiences, different realities. And we've got all these different arguments, the majority focusing on the neutral language of the law, the dissent emphasizing the impact, Justice Stevens pointing out the effect on non-veteran men. It's a lot to unpack. How do we even begin to make sense of all of this? Where do we go from here?
That's the question that's going to guide us as we keep going, right? Feeney shows us how complicated it is to deal with discrimination, especially when we are talking about policies that are supposed to be helping a certain group, even a group like veterans. And it shows how important historical context is. This case is not about good versus bad. It's a lot more complicated than that. It makes you think, it challenges your assumptions, and it makes you ask these hard questions about what equality really means.
And how to achieve it. Yeah. Buckle up, everyone, because this deep dive is just getting started. Welcome back. So last time we were talking about this really tough question. Can focusing so much on a law's intent make it harder to actually see and address the real inequalities that it creates? It's like we're missing half the pieces of the puzzle.
And that's exactly why this case, Personnel Administrator of Massachusetts v. Feeney, it's still so relevant today. It shows us the limits of what laws can do when it comes to fixing these deep-rooted problems of discrimination. Like, you can have good intentions, but that doesn't automatically mean you'll get fair results.
Right, exactly. So Feeney isn't just some old case that's stuck in the past. It's still shaping how we think about equality today, how legal decisions are made, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, how has this case impacted the legal system since then? What kind of ripples has it created in our search for fairness?
Well, one of the biggest things is that Feeney really solidified this principle in discrimination cases. Proving that a law has a different impact on different groups, that's called disparate impact, that's not enough to win a case. You have to prove discriminatory intent, which, like we were talking about, is way harder to prove.
So in a way, Feeney made it harder to challenge laws that seem neutral on paper, but actually have a negative effect on certain groups. It's like you need to have this smoking gun evidence to even get your foot in the door.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. And the effects of FINI, they go way beyond employment cases, too. It's been used in cases about housing, education, voting, even criminal justice. It's pretty far-reaching.
Wow, it really has had a big impact.
Yeah.
It's not just a legal precedent. It's become like this framework for how we look at discrimination in general. Do you have any examples of like specific cases where FINI has come up?
Oh, yeah, definitely. One that comes to mind is Ricci v. DiStefano. It was in 2009, and it was also about employment testing. This case was about firefighters in Connecticut who were competing for promotions. So the city gave a promotion exam, but then they threw out the results.
They threw out the results. Why?
Because a lot more white candidates passed than Black and Hispanic candidates. So they were worried about getting sued for discrimination.
So they were trying to avoid a discrimination lawsuit, trying to do the right thing, but it backfired.
Exactly. They ended up getting sued anyway by the white firefighters who had passed the exam but didn't get the promotion. And the Supreme Court, they sided with the white firefighters.
Wow.
Yeah. And they relied heavily on FINI in their decision. They said that to throw out test results just because of disparate impact, you need strong evidence that there was an intent to discriminate. And in this case, they didn't think the city had that evidence.
So it sounds like FINI, it set a precedent for saying that even if a policy has a discriminatory effect, you can't just throw it out. You need to prove there was an intent to discriminate. But doesn't that make it harder to fight against systems that are already unequal? Even if it's not intentional, the harm is still happening.
That's a great point. And it's the core of this ongoing debate. FINI shows just how difficult it is to address systemic discrimination. Because it's often about... They're baked into the system itself.
It's like this invisible force that's hard to pinpoint but still has these huge consequences.
Right, exactly. And that's what makes it so hard to fight. FINI makes us face that reality and ask ourselves, how do we create a truly just society when these shadows of past discrimination are still hanging over us?
So we've talked about how FINI has shaped legal cases, but let's zoom out a little. How does this case connect to all the conversations we're having today about equality and fairness?
Well, FINI really brings up this tension that we're constantly trying to balance the rights of individuals versus the rights of groups. We want to protect everyone from being treated unfairly because of their race or gender or whatever. But we also know that some groups have faced discrimination for so long that they might need extra help to get on equal footing.
Right. So how do we ensure everyone has equal opportunities, but also recognize that not everyone is starting from the same place?
Exactly. And FINI doesn't give us easy answers, but it does make us think about those complexities. It tells us that just getting rid of intentional discrimination isn't enough. We have to dismantle the systems that create inequality, even if they weren't designed to do that.
Like, you can't just say, okay, everyone's equal now and expect everything to be fine. We have to actively work to fix the damage that's already been done.
Yeah. And that's why FINI is still important. It makes us think critically and face these difficult realities about how to create real social change.
So much to think about. Personnel Administrator Massachusetts v. FINI. It's more than just a legal case. It's a reflection of how hard we are trying to create a fairer world. But I feel like there's even more to explore here. What other parts of this case should we be looking at?
There's definitely more to unpack. One thing FINI makes us think about is the role of the courts. Can they really create real social change? Or are there limits to what they can do?
That's a really big question. Can a legal system actually fix what's broken in society? I guess that's what we'll explore in the last part of our deep dive. We're back and we're ready to wrap up our deep dive into Personnel Administrator of Massachusetts v. FINI. We've gone through, you know, all those details, the court's decision, and all those ripples it's created in later cases and how we see quality today. But there's one question that really sticks out, right? Can the legal system actually solve these really big, complex problems in society and actually create lasting social change?
It's the question, isn't it? Like, can courts really fix what's broken? FINI, I think, gives us this glimpse into the power of the law, but also its limits when it comes to addressing these really ingrained social issues. And I don't think it's a simple yes or no answer.
Okay, so how does FINI show us this debate about the courts and their role in social change? Like, what are the arguments on each side?
Well, on the one hand, FINI shows us how courts can protect people's individual rights and challenge those practices that are discriminatory. I mean, think about it. Helen Feeney's whole case was about the Equal Protection Clause. And while she didn't win, her lawsuit really brought this issue of gender discrimination into the light, right? It forced the legal system to deal with it.
Yeah. So even though she lost, her case kind of forced everyone to pay attention to these issues, to really think about how laws can create inequality, even if no one meant for it to happen.
Exactly. And that's something the courts can do really well. They can shine a light on injustice, even if they can't always fix it. Like, it makes society confront these uncomfortable truths and think about its values.
But you said there's another side to this. What about the limits of relying on courts to solve these big social problems? Where does the law fall short?
That's where Feeney also becomes this this cautionary tale. The court was so focused on proving discriminatory intent, remember?
Yeah.
But they kind of missed, they didn't really acknowledge the disparate impact of the veterans' preference law. And I think that actually made it harder to achieve real equality because it set this this really high bar for challenging laws that create disparities, even when those disparities are like so clear in how people are actually experiencing the world.
It's like the courts are saying, we can only help if you can prove someone did this on purpose. But sometimes it's not about someone's bad intentions, right? It's about how the whole system is set up, even if no one planned it that way.
Exactly. And that's the big critique of Feeney. The law is powerful, but it's not, you know, a magic solution. It can't just erase hundreds of years of inequality or change how people think overnight. It can get rid of a bad law, but it can't guarantee a truly equal society.
So what can we do? If the courts have these limits, what are some other ways to create change?
Well, I think we need to do a lot of things, not just one. We need legal reforms, yeah, but also activism, social movements, education that really challenges those biases that people have. We need economic policies that are fair and give everyone a chance. It's about changing laws and changing how people think.
So it's not enough to just focus on the legal stuff.
Right. We need everyone involved. Activists, educators, people in communities, artists, policymakers, everyone using their skills and their voice to make a difference.
Okay, so after all this discussion about personal administrator of Massachusetts v. Feeney, what are the big things you want our listeners to remember? What can we learn from this case to, you know, be better citizens and fight for a more just world?
First, remember the law is not, you know, set in stone. It changes as society changes and as people challenge those limits. Cases like Feeney, they come from the past, but they're still shaping how we live today. And second, understanding these legal issues like intent versus impact, it helps us participate in these discussions about fairness and equality. We can't just wait for the courts to solve everything. We have to be involved.
It's a good reminder that we're not just watching from the sidelines. We're all part of creating the world we want to live in. Feeney tells us to ask questions, challenge things, speak up, and work together to make a society that's more just, more equal.
Well said. It shows us that the fight for justice never really ends, and it's something we have to do together.
That's a great point to end on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Personnel Administrator of Massachusetts v. Feeney. We hope this has sparked your curiosity and made you want to learn more, to get involved in these really important conversations about equality and justice. Keep learning, keep questioning, and never stop fighting for a better world.